welcome to Community Connections. I'm Alan Collier, and it's my pleasure to be with you actually for the next 3 hours. We're going to be talking to Yarra Valley Water for the first hour. Then it's our legal hour between 1 and 2. So if you've got any questions, give Greg a ring on 59-615-9915. 615-9915. Can't talk about a case, but we're happy to talk about any aspects of the law. And then between 2 and 3, we've got a fascinating man to come into Choice Tunes. And man, we won't even cover half his life over that hour. But anyway, it's my privilege to introduce Natalie, and Natalie's from Yarra Valley Water. How are you, Natalie?
Yeah, well, thanks, Alan. Thanks for having me.
No problems. Thanks for coming along. Now, we all know what water is, but we're not here to talk about water, are we? We're talking about something that Yarra Valley Water are very happy to be involved in. So just give us a brief outline, Natalie, on what we're going to talk about today.
Okay, thank you. So Yarra Valley Water are restoring habitat at our treatment plant site out at Launching Place. We're restoring 35 hectares of habitat for the critically endangered lowland leadbeater's possum and the helmeted honeyeater.
Absolutely. So how endangered are these two species?
Well, they're both listed as critically endangered, and I suppose the population numbers give you the best sense. This year's count, there was 36 lowland leadbeater's possums remaining in the wild.
That's all.
Yep. And there's just over 200 honeyeaters.
And so once they're gone, they're gone. If you don't turn it around, once they're gone, aren't they?
They are, and they're both located at the Yellingbo Nature Conservation Reserve, so they're both confined to one location, which makes the risk even greater.
Yep. Why are they endangered? I know why they're endangered, because there's not enough of them. But is it because of the environment, or are we encroaching on their land, or what's the reason behind it?
So the key reason is habitat loss. Their natural homes are the swampy floodplains of the Yarra River. I mean, they're endemic to Victoria, in this part of Victoria in particular. But that's also fertile ground for agriculture, and most of their habitat has been lost to agricultural use.
Yeah, mainly just it's been sold off over the years.
Yep.
So the idea of Yarra Valley Water is to give these little critters somewhere where they can breed and live in contentment. Is that the idea?
Absolutely.
So do you have to transport some of them there? Like you say, they're in a very small area. When this area is opened up, do you transport them there, or will they migrate there themselves?
No. So some of the birds will come from the Healesville Sanctuary. So the helmeted honeyeater's been bred in captivity at Healesville. Right. So it's very likely that they'll release some of those captive bred birds onto the site. But for the leadbeater's possum, it's likely translocation, so moving them from the current site at Yellingbo onto Yarra Valley Water's site in the future.
I don't know a lot about these little critters, so I'm going to ask you just a little bit more. When you take them and move them, is there any likelihood they're going to migrate the back they were, or are they more likely to stay in their new home?
Yeah, well, the one that's at risk is the honeyeater. So there's been evidence that some of the honeyeaters that have been released at other sites have made their way back to Yellingbo. So absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, that's terrific. All right, so What are you going to do there? I mean, it's all right to say, well, we're going to reinstate it, but what are we going to do?
So we're going to design, well, we've designed habitat or vegetation that meets all of their needs. So unlike humans, they can't just pop down to the shops to, you know, meet their food needs. So it's about designing habitat and vegetation that can meet all their needs for food, shelter, and to build nests for their young.
All right, so, and then, of course, the idea is when the habitat is there, then that they will stay. You'll make it so enticing that they'll stay and obviously breed. I mean, that's the whole idea, isn't it?
Absolutely. That's the ultimate outcome, is that whatever we recreate at the site meets all of their needs, and they're happy to stay. And can support them into the future, and that they breed and can establish a new population at that site.
Yeah, so Well, I was just going to say that it really what you want to do is recreate whatever they've created somewhere else, but make it so appealing that they're not going to go anywhere, do they?
Yes.
All right, look, I've just got to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more with Natalie.
Dawning on a Texas Sunday morning, how I long to be there with Marie, who's waiting for me there. Every lonely city where I hang my hat ain't as half as pretty as where Maria and the guy who's coming to see her. Just beyond the highway there's an open plain, and it keeps me going.
Talking to Natalie from Yarra Valley Water, and we're talking about what they're going to be doing with this new habitat. Now, you said that you're going to create their habitat, but what have you got to do to create that?
Well, if you can imagine, it's been the site is, I think there's a photo that we've brought in to show you, and the bottom half of the site down near the Yarra, it's been completely
denuded.
All the vegetation's gone. There's been drainage lines cut in to sort of drain the water. And so it's really about reinstating. The first part is really
Has that been by who's got rid of all the trees? Like, has it been land that other people have had that Yarra Valley Water have just got back, or what?
So Yarra Valley Water have had the site since the 90s. Yep. And before then, I think it was a Yarra treatment group.
So what are you actually going to do to reinstate it? That's more what I want to know.
Well, so the first thing is to get rid of the drainage lines and keep the water on the site, because we're talking about recreating a swampy habitat, and so we need to hold the water back.
That's what you're saying these critters want, don't
they? Yeah, that's what they thrive on, is this swampy habitat. And you can sort of see during the floods last year where the site has natural wetlands on it, and it's really about reinstating those. Yep. So some minor earthworks to reshape them and just hold the water back a bit longer, and then plant, you know, I think the estimate is about over 160,000 plants, and just completely plant out the site.
When you say plants, are you talking trees or are you talking little bushes or what?
A complete mix. So from really tall eucalypt species right through to smaller ground coverage, because they really like dense habitat.
So be it.
Yes.
So, Can you recreate what was there? Like, have you got photos of what was there back in the 1800s and 1900s so you can actually recreate that? Or have you just got to work on what you think is best for these critters?
So, yeah, there's really no playbook for recreating a natural system, and it's really challenging. So one of the things that we're doing, you know, this is not part of our core business, or, you know, pipes and turning on the tap is where we normally operate. And so it's working with other habitat specialists, ecologists, hydrologists to recreate those systems that were once there.
Yep.
There's another restoration site not far down the road from our site where the habitat's been regenerated for these two species. So it's taking the learnings from that, but also considering the unique features of our site.
So you talked about the drainage that's been dug there. So was this at some time a swamp?
Yes.
So it's been drained really to take it away from being a swamp?
Yeah. I think the land was cleared over 100 years ago.
Right. Something's just gone wrong with our computer. Oh, no, it's not. Sorry, I hit the wrong button. People over the years have done things to it. So what part... Well, first of all, let's go back. When's it going to start?
Hopefully we'll start next year. And so, you know, it is on the floodplain, so we have to time when we do the works and then plant the trees really carefully.
Yep.
So really, you know, during the floods last year, the site was completely inundated. So any of that earthworks that you need to sort of reshape and create those wetlands have to be done over summer. So we won't be able to start this summer, but hopefully the following summer.
So I'm going to ask you another question, which may be a bit unfair to ask you. How do you know that once you've planted all these trees and shrubs, that if a flood comes along, that it's not going to kill all the trees?
That's a great question.
Is there an answer?
There is an answer. So part of exploring that and designing that is to test the response in a flood. So that's part of what we've done to get to where we are now, is look at all that.
Because, that's one of the problems, isn't it, that very often that you could turn around and wind up with putting a tree there or a whole lot of them, and then all of a sudden you get a flood, and that's why some of these areas not have almost been denuded by themselves, because the stuff just dies, doesn't it?
Absolutely. So we know from other areas, particularly where the two species are now out at Yellingbo, hydrology and the impacts of changing the natural water regime has had negative impacts on that habitat. So that's a really key part of the work that we're doing in the design phase.
Right. So obviously, what is your next stage? All right. So from today, what are you going to do? Like, what's your next plan and to do?
Well, my role now is to take the design and work out how we stage it, because you have to order the plants to put in the ground 12 months in advance.
Yep.
So you have to be really sure that come the time those plants are ready to go in the ground, that the site has been prepared.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so, you know, the weather and the elements are... You know, we're really at the mercy of the elements in terms of the site. Again, that's that natural system that we just have to work with.
Yeah.
I mean, I know we know that sort of we're expecting a drier conditions this summer and potentially, you know, into the future. And so that'll favour getting the on-ground works done.
Yeah.
But conversely, we could experience a flood and that would change. And
I guess it was going to be my next question. Like, it's going to be... During summer, it's going to be, if you've got to get bulldozers in and all that, then that's a terrific time to do it. But then do you need a winter to show you, well, what we've done is going to have the effect we want, or do you just work on modelling all the time?
No, that's a great question, because that's the biggest, you know, the greatest indicator or measure of success will be how accurately we can recreate that hydrology.
Yep.
So fortunately, having that gap between when the plants are available and when we do the earthworks, that'll give us time to test and make sure that we've got that established those right sort of floodplain conditions.
And when would you envision you'd start the next part of your plan?
So the hope is to the aim is to start not this summer, but the following summer.
Right, so it's going to be nearly 12 months before there's any appreciable threat. All right, I'm just going to take one quick break and we're back with more.
in the city, back of my neck getting dirt and gritty. Been down, isn't it a pity? Doesn't seem to be a shadow in the city. All around, people looking half dead, walking on the sidewalk harder than a match here. But at night it's a different world. Go out and find a girl. Come on and dance all night. Despite the heat, it'll be alright. And babe, don't you know it's a pity the days can't be like the nights in the summer, in the city, in the summer, in the city. Cool town, meeting in the city, dressed so fine and looking so pretty. Cool cat, looking for a kitty, gonna look in every corner of the city. Till I'm wheezing like a bus stop, running up the stairs, gonna meet you on the rooftop. But at night it's a different world. Go out and find a girl. Come on and dance all night. Despite the heat, it'll be alright. And babe, don't you know it's a pity the days can't be like the nights in the summer, in the city, in the summer, in the city.
Place, and you're listening to Yarra Valley FM 99.1.
And I'm talking to Natalie from Yarra Valley Water, and we're talking all about this new project she's talking about. Let me just ask you, what part is recycled water going to play in your whole new setup?
Recycled water is a huge part of it. It's potentially, as we go into a warmer and dry climate, it could prove the difference between the habitat establishing and thriving and it not surviving. Yeah. So our site's sort of unique in that, you know, when we don't have natural surface water or those big flooding events from the Yarra, we can use recycled water in place to keep those swampy conditions on the site.
You mentioned when you don't have floods, is it ideal for what you're trying to do that you get floods every few years, or are they going to do more harm than good?
No, part of it is so there's sort of two elements to it. So there's part of it in the hydrology question. There's part of it is relying on those natural flooding events from the Yarra and large surface water coming onto the site. But the other part is the recycled water. And so when the surface water and the flooding from the Yarra is not available, we can supplement. So it's sort of building resilience into the
well, that's what you need.
Absolutely,
isn't it?
Climate resilience. So we're really sort of proud of that outcome, that we can use it in a meaningful way.
So, why did you pick this site? You must have other sites. So, for some reason, you picked this site. Why did you pick that exact site?
So, several years ago, an organisation called Greening Australia, who we're partnering with on this project, right, had a look at, you know, the corridor, the Yarra, really the Yarra, the upper Yarra catchment, and I picked out this site in particular as possibly a habitat site. And so they then went on to have a look in detail and found that, you know, its location within the sort of the broader region. You know, it sits nestled between Mount Toolbeewong and the Yarra. It has a good natural biodiversity on the site. So it has all of these features that make a great restoration site.
Right. So how long ago did that happen, where they said this is where we should be?
So that was back in 2019, and then they did a further study, and then COVID hit, and so we sort of...
nothing happened.
And nothing happened.
That's not unusual. Nothing happened anywhere. All right. You're talking about... You said some numbers before about these little critters and so many of the birds and so many of the others. Can you just give those quick numbers again, please?
So there's 36 of the lowland leadbeater's possum remaining in the wild.
Yep. So what would be your ideal number and how long is it going to take you to get to that? If everything went to plan over the next, say 3 years' time, everything's ready to go, you pop them back there, how long before you would expect to see some sort of improvement?
Unfortunately, the trajectory is not 3 years.
Isn't it?
No. The habitat actually takes a long time to establish because you mentioned before about what sort of plants you're planting.
Yep.
And so you need to plant them in stages so that you can, plants that have specific light needs, you don't shade them too heavily as they're growing. And then they're established, then you can go back and do some other infill planting.
Yep.
So it takes between 5 to 10 years to really establish.
So this is really a long-term project.
This is a long-term project.
So how long before you would see it that it would be established to the point where it's going to be a good basis for these animals?
Well, from the time we put the plants in the ground, potentially between 5, but more likely nearing 10 years.
So the whole thing could take 15 years before it gets to its fruit. It's still never going to really finish, is it? But before it gets to the situation where you're happy with the numbers.
Exactly, yeah. And so, but one of the things that you are doing, so whilst this project's focused on those two species, hehos and leadbeater's, as they're affectionately known, you're actually improving the biodiversity and the quality of the site for lots of other plants and animals.
I was just going to ask you that.
Yeah.
Through all of the modelling that you've come up with, have you identified some other, I call them critters because I'm not sure what they all are, that may in fact get involved in this habitat?
We've actually done some newer technology eDNA testing, and so what that involves
eDNA,
it's electronic DNA, and so you take a sample of the water, so we've sampled when the wetlands have had some water in them to identify what species are currently on the site. So we've done our autumn sampling, which is not particularly conducive to good results. I'm going to repeat that in springtime, and we're hoping we get a really good picture of what animals are using the site at the moment.
So you're not, like, there could already be a dozen or 20 or 30 species there, couldn't there?
There will be, but we don't believe there's any that are, you know, sort of critically endangered.
Yeah. No, but there are still another animal. So by creating that, do you think you'll also then create where they will multiply in quite numbers too?
The leadbeaters and hehos?
Well, those two, but also some of the other animals that may already be there.
Absolutely. Like, if you provide the right conditions and you're providing good quality habitat, then I think nature finds a way.
It sure does. Now, I've got myself off the question, which I need to ask you. You've got 36 of them now. What would you, to get them so that they're no longer an endangered species, how many would you roughly have to get so that you would no longer call them an endangered species?
I'm not sure on the total number of all the populations, but what you need to have is a diversity of populations so that they're not all centralised in one location,
right.
So that then you're establishing some sort of, over time, a genetic differences amongst the populations, which makes the whole group more resilient.
Yeah. Which I'm still trying to struggle to get some idea whether 100, whether it'd be a real success if you got 100 of these instead of 36, or do you need 500? That's the sort of point I'm trying to get at.
Okay, so I suppose, are you asking about moving, say, from critically endangered back to endangered? Okay.
And then from endangered up to where you'd say, well, we've been a real success here now, we don't have to worry. I just sort of want to get some idea for the listeners as to what sort of steps you're going to go through.
That's probably a question for zoos, but I think, I know looking at our site, we're looking at hosting potentially 50 leadbeaters and 100 hehos.
Yep. And also, continually, so that they're continually regenerating in numbers, aren't you?
Yes, and then I suppose once you've established a habitat at one centre, yep, then you need to be looking at where are the other places that we can create new habitats to further diversify.
So you're still talking on that one side, or you're talking about other sites?
So thinking more broadly about the species recovery, yeah, yep, you need multiple sites.
Yep. So there could be... like if we were sitting here in 30 years' time, which I'm not going to be, unfortunately, we could be talking about that you're doing it in another four or five locations as well.
Yes. I know Zoos Victoria are looking at a number of sites to really just sort of that create that diversity in these population centres.
So obviously the zoo is very important to what you're doing too, isn't it? Like without them, you really...
Yeah, they're our key partner. So we're working with Zoos Victoria and Melbourne Water and our in-house designer, Jacobs.
Oh, very good. Hmm. All right, we'll take another quick break and we'll be back with more.
FM acknowledges the traditional owners, the Wurundjeri people, as the custodians of this land we broadcast from. We pay respects to elders past, present, and emerging.
Welcome back to Community Connections. I'm talking to Natalie from Yarra Valley Water, and we're talking all about the reinstatement of Up the Road. Now, you've obviously got a couple of partners or a partnership in this. Can you tell us about that, please, Natalie?
Yes, indeed. So your segue was brilliant. It's really this site launching place. You know, the traditional owners of that land are the Wurundjeri,
yep,
and they're really, really excited and supportive of this project. Part of what we're planning for in the long term is to have the land management group from Wurundjeri manage the site, the Narrup Rangers team.
Oh, yeah.
So we're really excited and...
So you're going to create the habitat and then hopefully hand it over to the community to actually look after the site.
Yeah, that would be the best outcome.
All right. So, well, you probably already answered a bit of what I was going to ask you, but what, apart from that, what are the benefits to the community?
Oh, many and varied. But you know, I think in Australia we're really fortunate to have such a beautiful landscape and plants and animals unlike anything else found elsewhere in the world. And so part of that is, you know, preserving these two creatures for future generations.
Yep, which is good. And, I mean, there's been a lot of work done on this sort of thing too, isn't there, about if we don't do some things, then quite particularly as the environment gets a bit warmer, we're going to lose some of these species completely.
Well, yeah, biodiversity and climate change are inextricably linked.
All right, so we're going to, in a minute, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take another break in a minute or so, but when we come back, we'd like you to have your paper and a pencil with you, because there are ways, because these things don't just happen, and obviously I'm sure Yarra Valley Water would like to get you involved with it. And so what could, apart from the people who are listening today thinking, oh, this is a terrific idea, what sort of part can they play in it?
Well, if anyone in the community would like to be involved, you know, we're going to have over the life of this project opportunities for planting days and community connections. But, you know, a good start is to contact Yarra Valley Water directly at via email at habitat@yvw.com.au.
And we'll repeat that again just before the 1 o'clock news. So if you haven't got a paper and pencil, if you could write that down. So sounds like a terrific program. So, but what else can they do? Like, there's not much they can do at the moment, is there?
Not a lot, no. But there's a faunal emblems. I think I mentioned earlier that these two creatures are Victoria's faunal emblems. There's a faunal emblems family fun day being run at ECOS.
Yep. And when's that?
That's on the Saturday, the 18th of November. From 11 a.m. to 3 p.m.
And it's at ACOS, and that's just up the road. So
yes,
is it?
It is.
So it's going to be a fun day. There'll be wildlife display, face painting, music, welcome to the country, two nature-based art activities, and one with an Indigenous education focus. Am I right all about that?
Yes, and also, you know, I'll be on there to share on, you know, if anyone wants to ask questions about what we're doing, I'll be there to answer questions and talk to people about what we're doing.
That sounds good. And you'll have some photos up there too.
Yes, I will have some really big, beautiful photos for people to see.
All right, we're going to take our last quick break. We'll go to it earlier than what I anticipated. We'll play this last song and we'll be back. Please have your paper and pencil ready. Sounds like a great project, and you can learn a whole lot more about it.
Speak to the sky whenever things go wrong, and you know you're not talking to the air. To the air, and the world will look better from up there. Talking to the Lord, to the Lord. The world will look better than before. And if I stumble and it seems that I am blind, or if the road I'm on seems awful hard to find, and though my conversation doesn't always rhyme, try to find some time to speak to the sky and tell you how I feel. And you know, sometimes what I say ain't right. It's alright, 'cause I speak to the sky every night. Right. It's alright,
welcome back to Community Connections. Just a quick reminder, at 1 o'clock we've got the Legal Hour, of course, and they're bringing back some answers to questions we sent them away with last week, and we'll be talking about other things. We'll have Con and somebody else in, but also if you'd like to learn anything about the law, we can't talk about a case, it takes too long and you need to know too much, but if you've got any aspect of the law you want to know about, we're actually going to send them away with some questions about... No, I won't tell them because they might be listening, and then they'll be prearranged. But so we can get you any answers on any aspect of the law, and that's between... Well, I'd give Greg a ring now on 59615991. And then, of course, at 2 o'clock, we've got Choice Tunes, and this guy is a fascinating man. I've met him a couple of times. And man, you're going to really enjoy him. And we won't get half his life in the hour, I think. But anyway, all right. So I guess we now want. Well, first of all, let's just remind people that on Saturday, the 18th of November, from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. up the road at ECOS, there's going to be this family fun day. And Natalie's going to be there, so you can go along and throw any curly questions at her. But there's also be a wildlife display, face painting, music, welcome to country, and two nature-based activities, one of them being Indigenous education focus. And certainly if you've got any questions, go along. Natalie, if people... Well, give us that contact details again, please, for anybody who wants to find out more about this program.
Yeah, sure, Alan. The contact is via email, and the email address is habitat@yvw.com.au. I'll just repeat that. It's habitat@yvw.com.au.
So I guess if somebody contacts you today on that, are they going to... are you going to be... would they go on a mailing list then?
No, the emails come directly through to me.
So, yeah, but that's what I meant. But so you, once they... If they contact you, then... I guess, are you going to continue to tell the people a progress report on what's going on?
I think we're looking to start doing regular progress updates on our website.
Yeah, that's what I think you need to do. That's what I'm trying to get.
Yes, so, I agree.
So, and I guess, you know, from time to time. So, and it, what sort of skills or any would you see anyone who wants to volunteer, or you don't care, as long as they can stand up? You're happy with them?
We don't care, and I'm happy for inquiries. We'll really, you know, once we get into the nitty-gritty of the on-ground works, it'll sort of, we'll have a clear sense of what the skills we might need or some help we might need with planting days. So, yeah, put the feelers out, contact us, and, yeah, we can stay in touch.
And I guess one of the good things is if you do have a community planting day, it's not only the fact that you're doing something for the environment and your local community, but some of these you can have a lot of fun because you meet neighbours that you didn't even know you had.
Absolutely. So we are.
Nod your head, guys,
we are. Sorry. Oh, I got my L plates on.
No, that's fine.
We're going to start, you know, reaching out to our neighbours because they're really important to this project, so we're going to invite them onto the site and take them for a tour down onto the floodplain, talk about what we're doing. So that's just the first step of our community engagement.
So how close, I should have asked you this earlier, how close is your nearest neighbour?
Our nearest neighbour is, well, our site's 51 hectares, so...
So it's a fair way away.
It's a fair way away.
Yeah.
But he's not too far. I think he's only, you know, from his house to the treatment facility, I think it's about 400-500 metres.
Oh, that's all right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's really important for some of those people to get involved with you too, isn't it?
Yes, and I've had many conversations with our direct neighbour, yeah, you know, talking about the project, and it was really fascinating that he and his wife are very into the environment and really supportive of the restoration and of looking at what they can do on their site.
And that's probably why they live in the Yarra Valley, though, too, is it?
Yes, absolutely.
Because I was going to say, to be fair, one of the major reasons that people live in all around the Yarra Valley is for the environment.
It's a beautiful part of the world. Yeah. Lots of people come to the Yarra Valley
God's
just
own
to
enjoy.
Yeah, I don't disagree. It's great.
It's a bit different than if you were down at, say, you know, in the city. People can be there for all sorts of reasons, but up here, they're generally here for the environment.
Well, I grew up in Ascot Vale, and I moved out to, I know, right in the inner city, and I moved out to Croydon about 30 years ago, and now I love the connection to the Yarra Valley. It's so much better than the city.
I've got to ask you, and you don't have to answer if you won't, because if you don't want to, because it's personal, what brought you from a place, the side, somewhere like Ascot Vale, where you're almost tripping over each other, out to this area?
It was starting work at Yarra Valley Water.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, but I remember driving out via the Maroondah Highway and thinking, when did the paddocks start? Like, I've driven so far. I was such a city kid.
Yeah.
And now I've just completely embraced it. I love it out here.
And you'd be surprised how many people I interview that have retired up to the Yarra Valley.
Yes, I could consider a move from Croydon further out. It's a beautiful part of the world.
An enormous amount of people would... particularly around Healesville, and we have the U3A in and that, and a lot of those people moved out here just when they retired for the lifestyle.
Well,
you know,
something to consider.
Yeah. All right, so let's go back to you, to the contact details again. So if you could just give those out again for us.
Yeah, please. If anyone wants to get in touch, it's via email habitat@yvw.com.au. I'll just repeat that. It's habitat@yvw.com.au.
Are you also looking for any sponsors, like people who would donate towards your trees or all that, or is that all covered by Yarra Valley Water?
Absolutely. We would love support in terms of contributions to the project.
Yeah. What sort of contributions would you be looking for?
We're putting together a prospectus, and then that will really identify where the gaps are. So it could be plants, it could be help with fencing, it could be a contractor offering to do some work.
Yeah, just it's limitless, really.
Absolutely.
Because I was just thinking, you know, while volunteers are terrific, you've just got to be careful, because you can't always, like, you can't have them cutting up the land or something, because they wouldn't know what they're doing. They could get hurt quite easy. So it's mainly, but you would also not mind that if somebody who had earth moving equipment that wanted to get involved, you'd be happy with that as well.
That would be great.
Well, I hope in a few years' time you're sitting here talking to someone, whether it be me or whoever, and you're able to say, well, these critters are now in hundreds, and we're not too sure what to do with them. There's almost too many.
That would be wonderful.
Look, it's a terrific project. Again, habitat@yvw.com.au. The other thing is, too, that really we've only just really scratched the surface in an hour. So if you're at all interested, go along on Saturday, the 18th of November, from 11 a.m. till 3 p.m. You can talk to Natalie and anybody else, and you can also have a bit of a fun time. So what sort of animals are you going to take along on that day? There's going to be some wildlife display.
Well, Yarra Valley Water are just a one of many groups that we'll be bringing to the site. So I'm not sure. Hopefully.
You're just not too sure what's going to be there.
Yes.
All right. Again, look, I think it's a terrific idea. Natalie, is there anything else? We're just about out of time. Is there anything else that you think we haven't covered that you think we should have?
The only thing I'd like to say is I'd really like to acknowledge the genesis of this project, because it came straight out of the Yarra Valley community from the Mount Toolbeewong Land Care Group. Their secretary runs tours of the site.
Right.
At the treatment plant facility, and she for years mentioned to the operations team that this would be a great idea. So I'd just like to acknowledge her persistence in those conversations brought it to bear.
Well, that's pretty important too, because it means that Yarra Valley Water haven't come up with an idea and pushing it down the community. It means that the community has come up with the idea and they're pushing it up themselves.
Yeah, and it's great, and it makes for the best outcomes.
Yeah. And it should get the most people involved too.
Absolutely, I hope so.
Yeah. Natalie, this looks like a long-term project for you. And so is this basically what you'll be doing for the next few years?
I think so. There's a lot that goes into this. There's a lot of, you know, I talked about the wetlands. There's a lot of design. There's a lot of approvals. But there's also working with those other partners that are specialists to make sure what we're doing is the right fit.
Now, I guess one of the things that you don't have to worry about in something like that is putting drains through and all that, because you don't want to get rid of the water, don't you? Do you? You want to keep it on the site.
Yeah, we had some experts and from the recovery teams come onto the site, and the first thing they said was, oh, get rid of the drains, and this site would just be back to the floodplain or back to the swamp.
Yeah, because often in a case like this, the first thing they come in and say, well, we need to put drains in, we need to get rid of a lot of this water, but you actually would be going the other way. You want to stop the water running off the site.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's not natural to have the drains, so returning to that natural system is getting rid of them.
Unfortunately, we seem to, in a lot of areas, we've pushed a lot of these animals out, haven't we? We've just continued to break up land, build houses and do what we have to do, but at the same token, we haven't sort of given a lot of thought as to what's going to happen to the animals once we move in. I mean, you know, you hear of kangaroos down the Mornings Peninsula that are stuck because, you know, they've built all around them and they're just stuck in a little spot. So we've got to be very careful what we do. Natalie, unfortunately, time to go. The weather is just about knocking on... the news is just about knocking on the door.
Weather.
Thank you for your time, and I appreciate you came in and talked to us.
Yeah, thanks so much, Alan, and thanks to your listeners.
Saturday the 18th of November from 11 o'clock to 3 o'clock at ECOS down the road. I'm sure Natalie will be happy to come up and talk to you about any of your questions. So thank you for coming in, Natalie.
Yeah, thanks again.